to work on it because it's outside the box and it is outside the set of resources we have in our hands. Because we have to deliver a product within a well-defined time frame, and there is the danger to getting distracted and sort of focusing on stuff which is interesting but is not really getting us close to the final result.
Makes sense. Sorry, somebody just waved back there. No, that makes sense. Does somebody want to take notes? I'd be happy to share my legal pad if somebody other than me wants to take notes. Jane?
I'm not really a very reliable note taker. Okay.
Maybe Ola can help us with just kind of keeping notes.
Not
the
transcript. This is our transcript.
Not the transcript, just sort of cornerstone
things that we might.
Okay. And then we will have the recording also.
Well, at the end of this session, we need to present to the other group. So if you want.
Yeah. I think we reserve like 10 minutes at the end.
Yeah. Excuse the interruption, but you did say that if it was possible to go in one group, it was okay.
Two groups. One on the phone and one here.
Yeah. Oh. One on the group and one here.
Okay. Some. Oh. Can you get them back on? Where would you like them to be? Emily, Susan, Sharon, and Lynn can all be in one group, given that Lutz and others haven't joined us. Can you tell them which bridge to... Good. And please tell them we're sorry. Okay. So where do we take the discussion from here? Because I think we do have some very specific words... But I interpreted them more broadly than you did. It was
perhaps you did. I'm actually taking a broad interpretation of them.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting is that we have a terse scope, which is basically taking what is in the policy mandate and putting that into our scope. At the same time, I think things like identifying what the policy is. That's probably within our scope, but I don't believe we need to call it out. Relevant stakeholders, that's not mentioned in the mandate beyond law enforcement, consumers, right? Okay. I think that's in scope. My concern with listing explicitly, more explicitly than what is in the mandate, is that we then could say, anyone could say, I'm sorry, that's out of scope, right? So as an example, if a stakeholder... Right. If we went and listed stakeholders, okay, as in scope, and saying that we can do this and talk about this, 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 and this, if we didn't think of something, we then have to go back and add it to the scope, or it gets declared out of scope potentially. And so, I'm requesting that we consider a very simple scope of work that we know we must do because it's in the AOC. At the same time, understand that things like we have talked about here have been added are in fact within scope, and that basically it be perhaps two things. This is the scope as was defined for us. Here are things we intend on looking at, right, within that scope, as not an exclusive list, right, or an all-inclusive list, but as examples of what we will do.
Yeah, okay. And I think I'm agreeing with you, Bill. If I'm understanding and following everything, is for example, just looking at the first one, to assess the extent to which existing WHOIS policy is effective. Okay, well, that's a big question, and there's a lot of there's a lot of ambiguity there. So, just off the cuff, when I want to know when something is effective, first I want to know what it is, what its intention is, what problem it's setting out to solve, and then establish some success metrics and then measure it against something like that. So I think that if you can, at least in my mind, when you were discussing that, I'm picturing a tree with what's in the AOC broken out into, kind of the top level elements, and that out of each one, these other items that coming out here between identifying and documenting existing WHOIS policy and measuring it and understanding how it's performing relative to its intention is falling under, efficacy. And then promoting consumer trust, I think, is wow, that's just out there, right? So that's probably your catch-all bucket for all the other stakeholders besides law enforcement, which seems to be given a place of privilege in the AOC. But I mean, if we were to then take a look at the other some of the other things here about identifying the stakeholders and identifying the needs of the stakeholders, and that starts to seems to feed into the consumer trust issue. So if I'm understanding, I mean, are we saying the same thing different ways where we're putting the AOC items as like three, the tops of three mountains, mm-hmm. and then here are the boulders that make up those mountains?
I believe we're seeing it the same way.
Okay.
Okay. All I'm suggesting is that we, rather than make the definitive list up front, okay, and say that that's it, that we recognize, as an example, there, so law enforcement is one stakeholder, and as you mentioned, they appear to have a privileged position. I'm not sure they should have a privileged position. Okay, and so perhaps in the future we would want either to call out, right, either other stakeholders or suggest rewording of the language for the mandate, and going forward to say here's what this review team is about, and I think that'll come out after we do our work. Right, we will have identified a number of things that weren't envisioned, I believe, in the original AOC.
And so, just and I'll just be one more second here. Is just so to sum it up, then every other topic that comes up during the course of our deliberations must be mappable to these three, or they're out of scope.
I agree. We attempt to do that. I'm not suggesting. If there are things that don't map cleanly into one, or maybe they go in, I think the three we can put anything into one of those buckets or several of them.
Okay.
But if it were to come up that we found something that we all agreed there's something that really was missed and it doesn't go cleanly into a bucket, we should do it too. Right?
Okay.
I don't want to see, and I've participated in too many typically standards organizations groups where the scopes are so tightly confined, you can't actually do any work, right? You have no freedom. You just do A, B, C, D, right? And there's no intellectual freedom whatsoever. And I don't think that's appropriate here.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with the general mindset. My problem as a non-native speaker is that the term consumer is just not defined. Because you could either sort of interpret consumer as the commercial end user buying something on an e-shop, or you could sort of consumer, you could take the consumer to also include registrars when it comes to, I mean, they are consuming a service and they are paying for the service and they want to have some sort of well-managed environment to do that in. And you could definitely, I guess, extend that to the general operations of the internet, because if you're running like an end user IP service, then you've got customers hanging off the wire at the end and they have to use some services, and whatever it is they need sort of to use that service is customer interest. So I agree that we should be very concise to start with and not come up with a long list of things and trying to define them to the last bit. But as one of the initial work items, I'd suggest for this review team to understand within the scope of work, to understand what this term consumer means, or not what it means, but how we within the team are going to interpret it. I think as soon as we document what our understanding of the term consumer is, it will provide the framework to work in and to agree whether it's out of scope or in scope.
Agreed, and I think that another term that may initially seem very clean, but upon further inspection looks very fuzzy, is law enforcement.
Yep.
Especially meeting the needs of law enforcement, which are probably not monolithic and probably vary, you know, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But yes, identifying consumer. If there's someone, you know, if there's a stakeholder that is specifically named, explicitly named law enforcement, there might be a stakeholder that's implicitly omitted. And I think I'm thinking about registries, and I'm struggling a little bit because I understand how everyone downstream of GTLD registries consumes WHOIS data, but registries seem to be more the maintainers of or the keepers of Whois data. So it almost
those
seems
who
like
are the thick registries. So they're assigned being excluded for .com.
Well, they're
because they're a thin registry,
completely untouched by Whois in some respects. But no, it just does seem that if we've explicitly named one law enforcement, we've implicitly left one out with consumers.
Yeah.
So it's not a catch-all for everyone else.
I think that makes sense.
That registries are excluded, you're saying, or
yeah, it's implied. if we have law enforcement and consumers, then it almost seems like there's someone left out of the AOC here. Someone left out of this picture.
Do you want them included?
Yeah.
Good.
My concern is that we can't then say consumers is everybody but law enforcement, all the stakeholders but law enforcement, because we're missing one.
Well, no, I'm saying registry. If that's where we have to put registries, that they're a consumer, quote unquote, fine. We put them there.
Yeah, okay.
Plainly stating registries are a stakeholder in this.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm wondering
stretches our definition, but I agree with you.
Is the registry is not covered by the first bullet? Like, there is policy by ICANN, and it's defined. So it's ICANN on one end, there is the policy, and there is the registries on the other end. I don't object against having the registries included one way or another, but I would think that sort of going after bullet one, is the policy effective? We would definitely look at ICANN's part of the game, and we will definitely look at the registries part of the game. So for me, this could map into bullet one.
Okay.
But yeah. Again, interpretation.
So can we zero in on the language? So I just took some notes. You can tell me if I got it wrong, that we had a discussion that consumer is not defined. It could be individuals. It could be registrars, general operations of the Internet. But also what I was gathering from the conversation is that there are numerous terms that we would like to see defined in addition to consumer law enforcement. Maybe I'm adding that. Law enforcement's a very broad term. I'm going to throw in trust, consumer trust. What is consumer trust? I think we have to define that. How about legitimate needs? What is an illegitimate need? What is a legitimate need? I think at some point we're going to have to wrestle with that term as well. And then, of course, just the basic fact-finding, what is the policy and its implementation?
I'm sorry, can I jump in on that one? Because you touched on something I was thinking about, or maybe we're talking about over beers or something in one of these lovely Colombian restaurants, but the legitimate needs of law enforcement. You know, I think, maybe I'm being intellectually lazy here, but I think if you solve the problem of defining law enforcement, then you can presume that the needs of law enforcement are legitimate. I don't know if am I the only one that's willing to make that shortcut, maybe. I don't know. I think it kind of builds into the definition of Whois law enforcement.
There have been some situations where
okay.
But we have procedure,
okay.
Because occasionally, I don't know. Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to add, so similarly, we should then have the legitimate needs for consumers, right? If we're going to question legitimate needs of law enforcement are, then we would need to question legitimate needs of consumers, whoever they are.
But am I misreading here? The wording seems to say the legitimate needs of law enforcement and promotes consumer trust. So the phrase promotes consumer trust is what we're wrestling with on the consumer side. Or am I misreading the sentence that we've been given, kind of our operating legal principle here?
What would an illegitimate need of law enforcement be?
Fishing expedition. Certain types of fishing expeditions
in
that process.
I need more information than fishing. P-H-I-S-H?
No, sorry, F-I-S-H-I-N-G. The vast majority of law enforcement needs are legitimate, but one thing that telephone companies got in a lot of trouble with, if we just use the United States as an example, was wiretapping after 9/11 without the appropriate legal process. and they were called on the carpet in front of Congress and the world and lawsuits on this. So there is such a thing as whether it's a legitimate need following an illegitimate process or something. There are requests from law enforcement. I don't know, we studied this in law school, that are legitimate, and then requests that may or may not have fallen into that particular category.
Right. And so all we're talking about are the legitimate needs. We're not saying that we need to meet the illegitimate needs of law enforcement, fishing expeditions, whatever. Right. Should support what they legitimately require to do, to have in order to do their job, right?
I agree.
By the law.
By the law is actually opening another can of worms, which we already had on the email, and that's interpretation, which law to apply. Is it U.S. law? Is it sort of thinking about country code top-level domains and there who is service? Is it the national or local, or is it the and sort of... That was one of the backgrounds why I would have liked to have some briefing of the people who have been involved in agreeing on the AOC. Yeah. But again,
as a U.S. citizen, I would say it's not U.S. law.
Yeah, because U.S. law applies anyway, isn't it?
That's a good question. It's very similar to when we fall into cracks between jurisdictions. I think that also raises the issue of legitimate versus illegitimate. I mean, illegitimate is usually a turf war between two competing law enforcement agencies as opposed to one that's flat out asking for some illegitimate use of who is. I don't know. I have some hesitation about going down some of these roads because I think it says that ICANN, and by extension us, somehow have a role to play in solving, these overarching questions that are facing the internet and society today. And well, I think we can certainly acknowledge them and maybe opine on them. I don't know that we have it within our remit in this couple of paragraphs here to fix those things.
Well, actually, I think we should not be expected to solve any problems. I see the mandate of this review team to give a state-of-the-art report, just an assessment of what have been the components, what have been the expectations, what is the current situation, and based on that deliberation, we could then sort of issue a yes, no, we don't know conformance to this mandate. But on top of that, I would expect this review team to come back with a list of things where we just identified open issues. Because a review team, in my point of view, can never be, in the framework of ICANN, can never be a body to suggest solutions. Because whatever we come up with or whatever we identify as an issue has to trickle down to the bottom-up process and has to go through the formal and well-established policy development processes. But I would see us as expected to come back with, you did that, it worked, you did that, it did not work, and by the way, we have identified that there is a big hole which is close to the thing. That would be my approach.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if I said solve problems. What I meant to say was issue recommendations. I think that's kind of understood, if not explicitly stated in the AOC, and I don't believe it is. But I think that's just what they're looking for is more of an identification, gap analysis, and then recommendations. Because honestly, when that's what most people read anyway, they just skip ahead to the recommendations.
Let me go back, if I might, to the issue of laws that we were talking about a few minutes ago, because it seems to me in our list of open terms that we at some point have to grapple with is another one, but it's coming from a slightly different part of the affirmation of commitments, and I wanted to run it by you. In the very first line, it says, ICANN additionally commits to enforcing its existing policy relating to who is subject to applicable laws. And we've said that we're going to look at, I believe we said that we're going to look at the WHOIS policy, try to determine what it is, which may be easy or may not be, right? But, and its implementation, which may also be easy or not easy, or we may find variances of an implementation. We have to look at that. But this issue of, that we were just joking about, of what law, or what laws, seems to me possibly something we will be grappling. We need to grapple with as well, because it has an impact on everything we're looking at. It has an impact on law enforcement. It has an impact on consumer. What laws, and it has an impact on ICANN and what it's doing and its implementation. Is what laws is ICANN subject to, or are the registries and registrars in this policy under what laws? Does it exist, and what does it need to pay attention to? Bill, help me define this more, please.
Well, okay. So, to the extent ICANN has a contract, and I'm not, to me, I look at the affirmation of commitments not as a contract; it's just a statement. And it was a joint statement made between ICANN and the U.S. Department of Commerce. If you read in the affirmation, item two. The internet is transforming technology that will continue to empower people around the globe. So international. I'm taking applicable laws to be international, right? That ICANN is committing to enforcing its policy, subject to applicable laws as they appear around the world. So yeah, there are jurisdictional issues. There are differences in law around the world. Wilfried mentioned top-level domains, country code top-level domains, which may have very different requirements on them. I don't see ICANN as an enforcer in this by this statement in the policy who is policy mandate, but rather it's something to indicate that it has to pay attention to law around the globe. I believe it does. Okay, but. I'd argue against the narrow interpretation saying it's U.S. law or EU law or some other. Right? It's much broader and therefore more difficult. Right? I mean, we all know that this is an issue. I think it hits all of us in one way or another. But it is how the internet operates, and it has to continue to operate. Where the jurisdictions, there will be arguments between jurisdictions. There's no way to avoid that, I don't think.
I think I mostly agree, but I think, again, I'm either being hopefully optimistic and cutting right through something here. This language occurs before the language that establishes the review team. So I think that we first have to then map it below. It's more of a description of ICANN's commitment than necessarily part of our remit. But it is important that we need to map it into that tree that we talked about. I think that it becomes a question of competing jurisdictions or applicable law or whatever. So that probably falls under the needs of legitimate law enforcement. However, it does say the word enforce. ICANN doesn't enforce laws. ICANN enforces contracts. I see Stacy back there in the back of the room. Hello, Stacy. Stacy enforces contracts. So the enforcement part, to me, reads as effective, as it falls under there. And that what we're saying here is ICANN enforcement activities or its compliance, contractual compliance activities, in accordance with whatever we've identified to be the applicable law. Or maybe the question better stated would be, is there a gap between what ICANN can do in terms of contract compliance enforcement activities and efforts versus applicable law. So that was just how I off the cuff read that phrase.
So a gap between ICANN's, sorry to interrupt, but just to make sure I copied
that. This sentence is almost highlighting if there is a gap between any of the jurisdictional differences. Registrar in the U.S., registrar in the EU, registrar in small Pacific Island nation, and how that impacts ICANN's contractual compliance efforts and the effectiveness of their efforts. Does a different country say that ICANN cannot enforce its contract as it's written, whether it's with the registry or a registrar? Because that's all ICANN can enforce.
Correct. So that's, I would say that is an that's another, another way to interpret that sentence, right? Is that it is, I'm just parsing it. ICANN commits to enforce policy, subject to applicable laws, and those laws would be, as you point out, right, may vary jurisdictionally. I think that that's a very reasonable way to interpret it. It's typical legal boilerplate, right? saying, yeah, we agree to do what we agree to enforce what we say we will, provided it's legal. Okay, we're not going to do illegal things. So that's one way to interpret it. And then I also I believe the discussion we had earlier, you know, is also a way to for us to consider it, which is, yeah, the laws are going to be different depending on jurisdiction, and we need to be cognizant of that. But, you know, is, you know, the question we would want to answer is or look at is ICANN enforcing its existing policy, whatever it might be.
Then how does, I guess I'm still missing it, then how does the subject to applicable laws piece come in? Because that question has to do with the first part of the sentence. Is it enforcing its existing policy? But then there does seem to be this jurisdictional question that comes up, subject to applicable law. So doesn't that modify it or question it or open it up?
Well, you know, I don't have any background in law, and I don't have any sort of business law background or contractual stuff. I'm still coming from a technical background, but at least I think so. But sort of following your lines of argument, like the only way for ICANN to enforce policy is to enforce contractual provisions. Wouldn't that sort of in the end make it, double quote, very easy for us and for ICANN, because it's just international business contract law? I don't know whether this term exists. Probably it doesn't. Because if the only if we think that the only way for ICANN is to sort of to have an influence on implementation of the policy by wielding the contract stick, then it's not so much different like selling iPods, or if you have a contract that you are not supposed to use iPods in Germany because there is a whatever, then this is not any different from who is or domains, or I don't think that this is actually sort of the original mindset in the whole thing. But if you continue that line of reasoning, like it's just contractual compliance stuff, then it might be easy, but not useful.
Yeah, I agree with you, Wilfred. I actually think when I read this the first time, I've read this both ways that we're talking about, and I actually think it, for our work, has meaning both ways. One way is it's just contract compliance. That's where the policy, as best I can tell, is really defined, is in the contracts. And so, you know, this is who ICANN enforcing its policy through contracts and contract law, okay, subject to whatever laws apply for whatever contract ICANN is enforcing. So, you know, I don't know that we know what law applies in all cases. Okay, many of them will be no doubt in the U.S., but there may be contracts that were signed that are governed by other law. I haven't read the contracts recently to know whether they state, you know, what the jurisdiction for any disputes is, which would, to my knowledge, is that would be the applicable law in Wilfred's definition, right? The very narrow specific is we two parties agree, and we agree to be governed by this law, and if there's any issues, it'll be done in these courts. That's the law that would apply. It's also important, I think, for us to read this and say, subject to applicable laws, ICANN works internationally. There's lots of different laws out there that we need to be cognizant of as we do this review and perhaps make suggestions, right, for how to improve things, that we can't just have, let's say, a U.S.-centric view. Even if the contracts are U.S.-based, we have to take into account other jurisdictions.
And that's understood, and I think that part of promoting consumer trust means that could possibly indicate that the different stakeholders would expect some sort of uniform experience, despite, you know, their legal their patchwork, which would possibly mean that ICANN shouldn't have custom contracts with each jurisdiction. They're still, I think, for competitive reasons, for consumer trust reasons, and for security reasons, still looking to have a a one-size-fits-all registrar accreditation agreement or a general registry agreement or whatever it is. So so I think that, you know, that's something. But, you know, I mean, we should probably, we've got three of the four folks that are talking here are saying, you know, we probably need some folks from, we probably need to mark this area as one that needs some further legal analysis, possibly from ICANN or the other folks that are in the other working group. Or yep.
That's a good point. A note that we have about five more minutes. Sorry, I've been typing. We do have the other group up. Thanks to you, they have been working. I did just send them a note that said, you know, 5 minutes ago that said we have about 10 more minutes. Do they want more time? I haven't heard back from them. So I think we have to assume that we're wrapping up in about 5 minutes. So let's maybe figure out what we want to wrap up.
Just maybe one last statement because sure. I'm not based in the U.S. My expectation would be that it's not supportive globally for consumer trust if we would sort of suggest or accept that all the laws and all the contracts would exclusively be signed under U.S. law. I'm pretty sure that this would not be in the interest of ICANN or not be in the interest of the community at large.
Okay.
This was following on sort of like sort of having one size fits all contracts. If this would mean that all of them have to be enforced before a U.S. based court, that's definitely not going to fly, I think.
So,
I'm sorry. It wasn't necessarily that they would be. I mean, I think that the contracts need to be uniform. Mm-hmm. If I'm competing with another registrar, for example, and he has no obligations under WHOIS, and I have to spend millions of dollars to build a WHOIS system, and the consumer can choose from between either one, then my prices are going to be more expensive, let's say. And, mm-hmm. and so it's a different experience.
So would this be the right way to summarize the questions that we've raised, not the answers, but the questions that we're delving into under our scope of work? I think Bill said that there's a narrow way to interpret kind of applicable laws and what we're looking at. There is a broader way. The narrow way might be what's in the contract, what the law is that's decided in the contract. The broader way might be a non-U.S. centric kind of, this is a global experience. Should it be uniform? Is it going to divide up? These are all things we need to take into account as we move forward. I'll also throw in that when we're dealing with communication systems, public policy, often laws may somehow be involved because of public policy matters, which may be outside the contract. And I'll just share. In the community I grew up in, the contract for my house said no Jews, blacks, or dogs. But as a matter of public policy, that was invalidated. My family's Jewish, and we moved into the house. So how all this fits in, I don't know. But sometimes it's not always the contract that mm-hmm. governs.
Right. One more thing on this one is that and it's a piece that I don't see mentioned anywhere in, as an example, the RAA, the WHOIS policy stuff, but it's, I think it falls under consumer trust for my one definition of consumer, and that is interested third parties. There are contracts between ICANN and various parties. As an example, PayPal and eBay do not have contracts with ICANN, but we are a very interested third party to the agreements that ICANN executes and to their enforcement of those contracts, right? And this language actually is important to us as an interested third party, right? We know what the contracts are. We see them. We read them. We expect them to be, you know, as a consumer of the services offered by ICANN, registrars, registries, et cetera, we have an expectation that they will, in fact, honor these agreements and operate by them. And if they don't, our trust and our belief is that end user trust is actually significantly eroded. And I believe that's, you know, while it's not mentioned there, it is an issue because I suspect we could bring an interested party suit against someone or both parties for non-compliance.
But I mean, I just assume that would fall under consumer trust. There are business consumers, there are individual consumers, and, you know.
Yeah, that's actually one of the backgrounds why I suggested that one of the initial work items should be defining all the all the meanings within the framework of this review team, what the term or what the word consumer means. And if we come up with a short list, like this is what we interpret as its meaning, then I think we are setting the stage.
And I think we, at some point, I think we have to come up with a working definition before we can go forward. Not here, obviously, because we've got 5 minutes. But by London, I think maybe, and let me ask, you know, whether you think this is a good plan. By London, here, I think our job now to the other group is to define, it sounds like the summary of what we've done today is, what are the questions? What have we zeroed down in to the questions of the terms we think need to be defined? Shall we suggest in London that we come up with one, or if we can't agree, more than one working definition that we put out to the community to review with us?
Sure. I think something like that. I hope that we might be able to agree on the specific language. On a scope, and then to have, you know, if it's in part of our terms of reference or whatever, have a section of the document that is modifiable. Okay, that we agree on scope and say, that's our scope. We're not going to change that. Everything we do is going to fit within there somehow, and if we have to, we'll shoehorn it in. But we're going to allow that another section of the document to be either an addendum, which can be easily changed, or, as in an example, in board-level things, you have bylaws, right? And then you have policies. Policies are much easier to change, typically, than bylaws. And rather than I'm in favor of us at London or before London coming up with as definitive a list of things that we think or answering questions, okay? I would hate for it to be fixed, though, because I believe we will end up with things as we go on and say, well, we need to, this is something we really need to look at, and we didn't know it before because we didn't know what we don't know.
And that's part of the outreach process, is to find out, have we gotten it all? But at some point, and I think we've drawn the box nicely around the definition. We have been rejoined by our friends. So I think I know where we're going on this. I think I've been taking notes. But if I mischaracterize, let me know. I'm going to go out and get a whiteboard that I actually moved out. Oh, pad of paper. Thank you. It's here. How did that happen? Everybody on the phone, we got a great pad of paper that we can work with just at the right time. Thank you. The paper fair. And I think we should probably go back to our microphone so that the people on can hear us.
No, well, you haven't asked for that yet.
She wrote to me. She said, we're
thank you.
I'm going to be the multitasker. Have we all reconvened? Emily, Sharon, Susan,
Lee?
Here.
Yeah, we're here.
Wonderful. I hope you had a good morning.
We did.
And would you like to kick off with a discussion of what you were talking about in terms of the scope of work? We have notes on the side as well. And what I thought I might do is take notes on a big pad of paper as you talk, and similarly with our work as well.
Okay, Kathy, thank you for that. Sharon Lennon here. Our discussions were fairly fundamental because there's only three of us for a start, and two of us were fairly new to this environment. And we felt that we applied for a role, and the description of the role for which we were applying was quite clear, and on those basis we were commissioned to do this bit of work. And to date we've felt that the work has been, communication has been floundering somewhat, and we don't know why that is, and whether that's a lack of trust or a lack of common understanding. So we wanted to put that out there straight away that we didn't know why that was. So the basic principles of our scope of work were sound, and we felt that was a good way to take forward. And by the way, I've asked my colleagues, once I've stopped talking, to chip in if I missed anything. So I'll just start and they can chip in. We talked about, what we did talk about was then the definitions of the consumer and law enforcement. And I wasn't quite sure what a consumer was. And we agreed that consumer is simply somebody who wants to know who they're dealing with. And we went into a little bit of detail there around, Susan was very helpful about the need to differentiate between the private and business use, and whether someone's trading or not trading, and your expectations of privacy around that would be different. And there are some good examples around the globe, and .nl was given a good as a good example.
Susan.
And we appreciate the need to balance between privacy and security. But we did think that that could be explored in greater detail when we met face to face, and that was the whole point of our group, to explore that. And the other one was law enforcement, of course, of particular interest to me.
Excuse me.
Because being the first law enforcement person on
excuse me, just a second, please.
I want to know who I was representing. And I want to know, was it people with police powers or law enforcement powers, or was it much wider than that? And we agreed that there are certain, like, I talked about IP, for example. That's a big one in this agenda. And we said we've completely got to flesh this out when we get together, but really, whoever I was representing or law enforcement meant, it would have to go through the portal of law enforcement. So, quite a good conversation, but the overriding thing is, let's get on with it. Unless my colleagues want to add anything, that's probably all I want to say.
Okay, thank you, and... we were just noting that that went through very, very quickly, and I think that we may have captured it all. This is James speaking, by the way.
Okay.
So let me run through here what Kathy has captured, and the whiteboard just fell. That was pretty cool.
Do you have the microphone, James?
I do have a microphone. Is that better? If you can
hear
me.
If there's a way to get you a little bit louder, it would be better.
I'm rattling the windows in this room right now. I'm like the voice of Moses or something from the mountaintops. It's rattling the furniture, but and the technical folks are shaking their head that they cannot make it any louder.
Okay.
I will do the best I can to project and to speak as clearly as possible and slowly as possible. Will that help?
Yeah.
Okay. So what Kathy has captured, and I will read through the whiteboard the elements that she has listed. It's very likely we may have missed something in the middle when we were trying to keep up. That there were communication concerns discussed amongst the remote group. And this is something that we've identified that we need to work out either in advance of or at London. But they certainly need to be put to bed to everyone's satisfaction quickly. The next topic was the definitions of consumer and law enforcement. So there were two definitions there, and that consumer was further divided into private and business consumers. Correct so far?
Correct.
The next step was law enforcement. And help me here, Kathy. It looks like law enforcement was broken into three components. Police powers. Not policy. Police powers, intellectual property of... concerns or interests, and then the court system. Is there anything missing from there?
This is Lynn, James. If I could just add one more thing to what Sharon said, is we talked about whether or not the question here about the scope of work is our question whether or not we would amend it in some way or change it, and our feeling was is that we're all satisfied with this draft. We weren't sure is this entire draft from ICANN or is part of it a proposed draft from Bill?
We had a fairly healthy discussion on that as well, and I think that we can. That's an excellent segue, Lynn, into possibly where we would share the notes from our discussion, and then see how well they map or align.
I think The only suggestion that we would have along those lines is that if there is a fear that you know, we might want to explore or discuss some aspect, and there was a conflict, a hypothetical conflict of whether or not that discussion was relevant to our scope, we feel that could be addressed by just adding like a sentence at the end that just says that the scope of work, you know, is not limited. We think it's written pretty broadly, and we could just add a sentence at the end that says that, you know, any relevant discussion initiated by a member of the project review team, you know, would be considered.
Okay, thank you. And there are a lot of heads nodding over here in Columbia, and those are very much along the lines of the conversation we had, if not using a lot of the same words. I lost it too, Kathy, the exact words, but any relevant topics or dependencies, I think, was a word that we used. I'm not sure if I heard Sharon or Lynn say that, but any relevant topic or dependencies that arose during the course of our discussions.
Right, because, I mean, I think it is not only my intention, but the intention of everyone who's signed up for this is that, you know, we want to thoroughly explore the who is policy, and we would not want to shut down any relevant dialogue. And at this point in time, since we're just beginning, it's hard to foresee or anticipate, you know, every path that we might explore. So if there's some worries about that, then I would just say add a sentence at the end that, you know, just says that our work is not, you know, limited to these statements.
Yeah, I think that's correct, and I will. I think that's. I mean, Bill, is that alignment with what you were saying? Yeah. So we're all, I think, in near unanimous agreement here, and we had many of the same discussions on this end about not artificially or arbitrarily limiting the discussions with too narrow of a scope. So I'm going to hand back now to Kathy, and here you go.
Who would like to have the pen? Somebody needs to have it. Okay, I'm afraid. I'm passing the pen. We now have your comments up on a big piece of paper on the wall, and we'll try putting ours up. It's very interesting that you end, this is Kathy, of course, it's very interesting that you end with the scope of work and keeping things open, because that was our starting point. That came up very early in our discussion, that we definitely want, you know, the sense of the group was that we want to try to define what we're doing, but also keep in mind that we may not identify everything up front and not create our borders of scope, not define them so rigidly that we can't add additional things as they come up from the group and also from the outreach projects that we're going to have. We also had the same starting point of going through the definitions, you know, the terms, and pointing out what was not defined. We also started with consumer is not defined. And we explored, is that, what did we explore? Buyers, registrars. Wilfried mentioned that there are issues of general operations of the Internet that involve consumer and consumer data. Other terms that we found to be very broad and undefined, not just consumer, but consumer trust. What is consumer trust? Law enforcement. Legitimate needs. We were wondering what the applicable laws are, what the jurisdictions are that need to be taken into account. We were really going through and trying to identify open issues on and thinking that we need to define these maybe in London a little more narrowly, some working definitions of these open terms. We spent some time in the applicable laws trying to discuss, are we talking about jurisdictional issues, international issues, do we need to pay attention to law around the world? And there was a sense we really do. This is global, and the affirmation of commitments, Bill pointed out in another section, says explicitly this is global. The scope of what we're dealing is global. We recognize this makes things broader and more difficult, but we think that falls within our scope. It was suggested that we examine the gap. See if I get this right, James. The gap between ICANN's contractual efforts on compliance and their effectiveness and jurisdictional differences in applicable laws that may exist around the world. An issue came up about how to interpret, again, still on applicable laws. We were wondering, is it a narrow definition? You can see we went for a broader definition, but there was a question of whether a narrow definition is. Do we just look at the contract between the registrars and the registrants, between ICANN and the registrars, between ICANN and the registries, to see if those define the jurisdiction? For example, if it's the United States, do we want to stay with that narrow definition, or are there reasons not to have a U.S.-centric view on this to go broader? At some point, and I may let James explain this a little more, the question of the uniform experience versus different experiences. I'm going to let him explain this, because it was an interesting issue.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It probably was different. We were trying to determine whether the uniform experience of all stakeholders was a component of consumer trust, as well as, for example, the having the uniform contract, a one-size-fits-all contract for, say, accreditation for ICANN, was important for registries and registrars. I'm getting a little feedback here, sorry. For registries and registrars who might I just took my BlackBerry out of my pocket and the phone, the noise went away. But for example, excuse me. If Registrar A is in Jurisdiction A and feels that they have a lighter obligation to under their WHOIS contract with ICANN, and Registrar B in Jurisdiction B has much more onerous and expensive obligations, those two registrars, although they may exist in different jurisdictions, are probably competing for the same pool of consumers, and therefore they are going to be providing dissimilar consumer experiences based on their jurisdictional differences. So we wanted to get an understanding of whether or not it was still desirable to have kind of a uniform competitive playing field, I guess is a better way of saying it. And Kathy walked all the way to the other side of the room. There you are.
Thank you. Thanks, James. That actually, let me ask the local team. Is there anything else anyone would like to add based on our discussion? James wants to add something. Bill?
Yeah, we did kind of start to, or at least visualize a tree structure that started with the AOC as the source from which all of these definitions were to spring, and then we would break them down into the three top headings. And I think we agreed that this was probably the good way to start, and then the conversations and discussions and definitions would become more broadly based and less limiting the further each level down. So I think that's how we initially kind of started this off, and I don't know if you want to expand upon that a little bit, Bill, or handing it off just a moment.
Yeah, I get the I had suggested that we go back to the earlier version of the scope that basically was the recapitulation of the mandate from the AOC, and then that, and in terms of a document, I would look at that and say, well, okay, we have potentially a scope statement, and that's the scope, and then underneath it perhaps, or as an addendum, a set of things like who are the stakeholders, what is the policy, what are definitions for consumers, legitimate needs, law enforcement, etc., and as James pointed out, and where do these things fit in terms of the AOC, we say, okay, here's how it hooks in, and why we need to do this, that either document or piece of the document is the thing that morphs and changes over time as we learn the things that we don't know. right? When we're going out and conducting reviews, getting input from others or discussion among ourselves, we hit on something and say, well, we didn't think about this. We agree it needs to be in there. And we'll discuss it, or perhaps we agree it needs to be in there and there's no way we're going to be able to do anything with this, so we'll push it off to the side, but we want to note it. But that's a way for us to have a well-defined scope that we agree we aren't going to change, but we agree we are going to be flexible in what we do. We're not going to attempt a priori to say, this is exactly what we are going to do, and then because we spend so much time agreeing on that, then we don't have anything to do because we've done everything at that point.
This is Lynn Goodendorf. After listening to all of that, my reaction is that you guys have been working on going into more detail on the task to carry out our work, and nothing you described there sounded to me like it would be out of scope. It just sounded to me like these are tasks that you're starting to organize and lay out a plan of work for us. To me, that's not really the same thing as scope. It's more like, you know, building the plan of work.
Well, I think, Lynn, I don't know that, and there's a couple of us shaking our heads here, I don't think that we felt that way. We were essentially establishing boundaries starting with the AOC and identifying what the AOC was excuse me, asking us to do and what we had remit to do under the AOC. And I think when we first hit those three primary bullet points, so effective policy, the legitimate needs of law enforcement, and consumer trust, that's where we kind of identified that those are very vague and that we have some definitional work to do. But I think that we've established at least the primary outline of what our work boundaries should be with those three. Bill wants to, oops. Bill?
Yeah, and then the other thing I'd say is it sounded like you folks did as well. We agreed that we don't want a scope to be so explicit that we can't later modify or add something that we haven't, you know, we didn't think about. We're looking and saying, yeah, we need a scope that we agree to operate in. And then we also understand that there are things, we already have identified things in our discussions that we agree are in scope, right? And, yeah, here's how it would hook into what's in the AOC. That's kind of what we were doing. It wasn't so much task, trying to define the task necessarily, Lynn. It was perhaps looking at some exemplars and saying, well, okay, here's one. How would we address that? Maybe another. And then just noting and saying, okay, yep, we need to do more work on that. We're not doing that today. We know we need to do it, and it's an example of what we need to do.
Okay. Well, my individual feedback is that I didn't have any objection to anything you guys identified, that they all sounded to me like they're consistent with the mission that we've been given as a project review team. Sharon and Susan, I don't know if you might have different reactions.
No, entirely consistent with your views there.
We've been doing a lot of talking on this line. Please keep talking on the remote line. Thank you.
Well, how do we move forward from here? It sounds like we're all in agreement. So how do we move off the dime here? What's our next step?
I think a recommendation, this is James, one recommendation would be to, now that we have this stuff captured, as we start to put together a more formal scoping document that merges all of these elements that we have discussed today into a starting point on the wiki, and that we then use that as the starting point or formation of our agenda for London. Whether that is, you know, we attack that
work plan that's starting to sort of take shape over the horizon, whether we attack that as a group or whether we find some logical subgroups that we can divide into to attack that, I think is probably an open question for London. And I think that that's probably what our next move would be. I don't know. Bill, is that what you were thinking? Bill's nodding. And what do you think on that end, Lynn?
Yeah, I would say I'm just anxious for us to start, you know, getting some traction on our work.
Well, as I look at Kathy again, as I look at the notes that we took from both presentations of both groups, I see a lot of similarities and overlaps. Certainly needing to define some of the key elements of the affirmation of commitments, most of the key elements, is central to both of our visions. What we talked about here at the very end of our work in the small group was that definitions and coming up with definitions may be critical for London. Some advanced work on it, but also focusing down by London or in London to one or multiple working definitions. If we can't agree, then there may be multiple possible definitions of, say, consumer trust. And that one of our missions may be to present the right questions to the community, so that we may want to create definitions in London, and then as part of our outreach effort, put it out to the community and say, "Do you agree? And if you don't, what else do you consider within our scope? What else do you consider within these definitions? What else do we need to be looking at?" And of course, be flexible enough to include that. Wilfried has asked to talk. Is there anyone else online that we should put into the queue? Online, on telephone.
Just a little bit, a little comment for the vision for London. I think we should try to have some working stuff in place before we meet in London, and sort of to review that during our face-to-face meeting. And if possible at all, if we get as far as that, my suggestion would be to try to put together a rough framework in London about the questions we would like to ask to the general community, and to provide a framework for the feedback. Because sort of just asking a question, "Do you like it or not?" is maybe not generating the answers we would like to receive to actually help us with the further thing. So maybe we would be able to sort of structure the things and put out some framework for feedback. Let's put it that way. So back to Bill.
Yeah, this is Bill. I just want to point out we don't have actually the majority of the members of the group here. So I would urge a wee bit of caution in how we might report back to them. I mean, we certainly can say, yeah, we achieved rough consensus, but we now need to have a discussion in a larger group to make sure we want to make sure they feel included in this.
Okay.
This is Lynn. I think that's a very good point, Bill, because you know, we do have so many members of the review team not able to attend, and we did agree that this would be an informal meeting. So if nothing else, as a courtesy, I think we need to communicate that, but surely that could be done in an expedient way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we label it as brainstorming, and we know that it's still left open for changes.
I think everyone who participates in this exercise today is fully aware that this is not a formal meeting. This is an informal get-together, and we just try to set the groundwork to formally build on that one. My expectation would be that we will have another formal teleconference meeting before getting to London as a one-to-one example of a human being.
Yeah, this is Bill. What we might be able to do, given that we have roughly half of the team here, that was engaged in the conversation is come up with a proposal for the rest of the team to say, here's what, you know, at least a large number of us talked about, here's a rough draft of things, here's where we stand, what do you think about this as a way going forward, and here's how we would get from where we are today or tomorrow or later in the week to London. And this would, you know, in no way do we want to be, you know, exclude you from any of this, but we're trying to advance the work in a timely fashion, and we hope that, you know, hope that it's okay.
So to do that, we would share, we'll type in these notes and share the results of our brainstorming, perhaps ask for input and additional ideas and thoughts, concerns, questions from people who unfortunately couldn't be present. I'm just taking notes as I talk. We'll address those and then I guess come up with a subcommittee, hopefully including people who were local, people who were remote, and people who weren't present, to take us to the next step, which is defining this further as we go into London. Is that right? Thoughts from the telephone link? Lynn, Susan?
Sharon Lemon here. I don't think we've, best of all in the world, I don't think we've done too much here that's going to trouble anyone else. And again, if I might be frank with you all, which I hope our relationship will always be, this has been a long conversation where I don't think we've achieved a great deal. And I just hope that at our face-to-face meeting, we move this on a pitch. I want to play the biggest part I can, and I haven't got much experience as the rest of you, but here we are 2 hours later, and I don't think that anyone who misses conversation would have missed a great deal. I'm sorry to be as candid as that, but that's how I feel.
I appreciate your sharing what you're thinking. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Lynn. I share Sharon's reaction that I do feel a little bit frustrated, that I just feel like as a team we keep going around in circles, and so, you know, I want to make sure that we accomplish as much as we can before the meeting in London.
This is James, and I just wanted to point out, I'm actually encouraged, been through a number of ICANN PDPs and one previous review team, policy development groups, and I think we're actually par for the course, if not actually kind of moving along at a pretty healthy clip in the context of this world. So I hope that doesn't frighten everyone, but this is actually unusual. It's unusual, in fact, that we haven't really hit anything that's bogged us down. So I would rather be more encouraging and say, let's, you know, we're building a springboard here, and things can progress even more rapidly as we go forward, because we're laying the ground rules in advance. And as Bill has said, we get into a lot of these working groups in ICANN, and we find out that if we don't wrestle with some of these definitional or scope issues at the outset, we find ourselves in a quicksand somewhere, you know, 3, 4, 5 months down the road, and unable to get ourselves out. So I think it's time spent, but it's time invested.
Thanks, James. It's good to hear that.
And this is Kathy. Hopefully when I share the sheets, there's a sense here that we've moved forward today. Both ourselves and in conjunction with you. I was so pleased to hear when you presented that you were focusing on the same questions we were. You know, we may have gone into a little more depth. We may have gone off topic a little bit. We may, you know, had different questions, but the same issues. And that bodes very well for the fact that we're within kind of defining the scope of what we need to be doing, and there's general agreement. And hopefully we have a number of people watching and listening, and hopefully they will also let us know what they're thinking or whether they're asleep at this point. and certainly I imagine the people in this room will be the core of our outreach responses as well. Let me ask, does anyone want to take a 5-minute break? And I think we've kind of finished this section. We have Liz Gaster with us. We're going to, on the Adobe, we're going to go ahead and put up some materials. I think, so there's nodding here. Are you guys okay online? We're going to take a 5-minute break and come back and reconvene. James wants to say something before we do. And then we'll come back and Liz Gaster, senior policy counselor to ICANN, will begin to help us look at the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg of the fact materials available to us.
I just wanted to say that I do have a conflict, so I will probably not return after the break. I know that we go until 4 o'clock here, and I do have to finish the other AOC review team as it winds down its work as we're getting started, as they are going to be having a meeting here in the other room. This is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. It's meeting with the board. But I would just want to reiterate, please don't get discouraged. As Liz, I'm sure, will tell you, this is a couple of, I think, very, encouraging hours out of a controversy that has been brewing since I was in junior high school, by my count. So this is good. This is time invested. And if you want to clear a room faster than anything at ICANN, you could say that there's free coffee outside, or you could say the word "who is." I think both would have the same effect of emptying a room, and so please do not get discouraged.
Thank you, Jay. And thank you for cloning yourself and being in two places at the same time with two review teams. 5-minute break it is. Thank you all. And we will not reconvene until everyone online has rejoined us.
The operator, did they take a break?
Yes, they did. They're taking a 5-minute break.
Okay.
Let's hope it's just 5 minutes.
Okay.
Is that Tanya?
Yes.
Yeah.
minutes if we could reconvene. Were you going to put up the Adobe, Alice?
Yes.
Okay.
Can we put up the new document? For those, is everybody on the conference bridge on the Adobe? We're uploading a new document.
Yep.
Great, thank you. Liz, you're going to be live? I don't know if you want to kind of take us through the outline of what was posted.
Hello.
Hi, this is Kathy, and you can see we're still trying to upload the Adobe.
Oh,
there
okay.
It is. Let me introduce Liz Gaster, Senior Policy Counsel for ICANN, who is wizard extraordinaire. I don't think anybody in the ICANN process knows more about who is compliance, who is policy activities. I don't think anyone has drafted more of them than Liz. Liz is also leading your policy counsel to the GNSO Council. And so Liz has been working for the last year on WHOIS studies.
3 years.
3 years. WHOIS studies terms of reference to go out and really gather some data on both the WHOIS system, on its uses, on its misuses, on proxy privacy. Lots. I think we'll be talking to Liz a lot in the next 9 months. But right now, can everyone see on the teleconference the WHOIS background information? Can you see
no,
the document?
I'll put my six.
Okay, we're still trying to get it up. If you can go to our wiki, you can go under WHOIS background information, and all we're doing is we're going to walk through the 7 points of information that's been uploaded. It's my sense, and Liz can confirm or deny, that what's been posted on our wiki as background information is the tip of the iceberg of what might be available to us. So we're going to begin to walk through some compliance documents, some activity documents of a process that's been going on for 25 years broadly and for 8 years, at least 8 years within the ICANN process, the WHOIS questions. Can anyone have the people on the bridge gotten the background information yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Is it possible to go to the wiki for the WHOIS background information to link to that section? It is on the wiki. Can someone put out the link to the WHOIS background information page on this side? Great, thank you. On the bridge, let us know when you're ready. Sorry about the difficulty getting this onto Adobe. Alice is working hard.
So I have, this is Susan, I'm in the wiki.
Good.
Does anybody else need that? Or?
So it's Liz Gaster here. Sure. Susan or Sharon, can you just confirm that you've also got the document in front of you, whether it's via the Adobe Connect or via the wiki?
For sure, I'm on the ICANN site under the review teamwork.
This is Susan. I'm on the wiki, so I can get into.
Great. We just want to make sure that you can see the same information that we're looking at here, and it is available in a couple of different places on the review team wiki and shortly on the Adobe Connect.
Lynn,
yep,
Sharon, are you up?
Yep, I have
it.
Great. Thank you. Back to Liz.
I'm going to try to breeze through this rather quickly, but if you'd like me to focus in on any particular details, I'm happy to do so. Before I begin, in the room here with me, and I apologize that for the folks that are remote, but I just want to note that Pam Little, who's the acting head of compliance, is in the room with me also, and Stacey Burnett, who's a senior director in the compliance organization, and then also Steve Shang, who is a senior technical analyst in the policy group, who's done some work on the technical side on who is. So we actually have quite a few staff people here in the room with us.
Liz, at the end of this, could you email the names and email addresses, if that would be okay? Names, titles, and email addresses of, because I'm sorry, I didn't know you and I couldn't introduce you, so hi. Because I think if it's okay with you, we'd love to have you as resources for the future.
Yeah, and I think probably you'll want to work through Alice and Olaf in terms of contacting them, but I'm absolutely happy to provide the contact information and make sure you're familiar with the names and who they are and their background. So, yes, thanks for that, Kathy. And, Steve, please remind me of that if I forget. Okay, so we have provided an extensive backgrounder that we've divided into categories here. First is this background section. And perhaps if we can just kind of scroll as we go here. Is this just one page, or does it scroll down? Great, thank you. The background is really just generic information about who is. The technical protocol, what it is, what's been going on over the last 10 years at a very high level, the fact that there have been 10 years of task forces and working groups, surveys, and other policy activity. There is a general policy page on who is that's noted that is a kind of comprehensive compendium of all the policy work that's been done on who is. But it is not as annotated as what we've provided here. So it is a good resource, but it's a little hard to tell from that link. This is the gnso.icann.org/issues/who is. When you go to that page, it really is just a very, very, very long series of links. So I think you're going to find our backgrounder a little more useful because it's more annotated than that. We wanted to provide a little bit of a idea of what we mean by who is registry data and thick and thin who is, just to make sure everyone knows what thick who is versus thin who is. We wanted to provide just basic information about registrar obligations in the registrar accreditation agreement, which are listed here, and again, happy to answer any questions you have. Obligations of registrants under the RAA, which we've also provided here. And just to my caveat that I'll mention a couple of times is that this is an abbreviated version. It is not exactly what the RAA says or any of the primary documents. I've tried to abbreviate them to make it more convenient, but of course, please go to the original source for exact information and exact correct wording, because I may have abbreviated too much in some cases. There is a whole section here, number 2, on selected who is accuracy work by compliance. These are kind of the key compliance elements, and also some information on some studies that have been done on who is by the compliance department. Pam Little, again, and Stacy Burnett are going to be kind of our internal resident experts on this compliance work. So I'm not planning to go into much detail there unless anyone has questions. And yeah. We do have a list of who is policy activity that is historical. What I tried to do here is just put in chronological order a lot of the work that's been done on who is. And this is where it definitely is an abbreviated, even though it's long, it's like 3 pages in text, it is an abbreviated summary of all of the policy work that has gone on in who is. And what I've tried to do also is highlight, I think on the next page, Olaf, some of the key actual changes that were made, policy changes that were made, for example, the board approving these policy recommendations requiring annual data reminder policy, a restored names accuracy policy, a prohibition against bulk access to who is information for marketing purposes, and additional prohibitions against resale or redistribution of bulk who is data by data users. These are policy activities that have actually been completed on who is. So although James referenced many years of work with not a lot of outcome or changes, there actually have been some over the years to address these concerns here. In addition, just moving on now to the next page, in the 2006-2007 time frame, the GNSO spent a lot of time considering what we call an operational point of contact, or OPOC, proposal. And this OPOC proposal was considered for quite a long time, but ultimately in October of 2007 was essentially rejected by the council in lieu of conducting more studies of who is. There were concerns that OPOC would be very difficult to implement, very costly, and that there were unanswered questions about how it would be implemented that were perceived by the community as very significant barriers to adoption. So instead, the council decided that we really needed to have more fact-based information about who is, which was the start of the who is studies work that I've been doing for the last 3 years or so. Under this, we'll get to the study shortly, but I also wanted to draw your attention to some SSAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee of ICANN, which has produced several informative reports on who is over the years, which I definitely encourage you to at least take a look at. Also, the GAC, the Government Advisory Committee, has been very outspoken about concerns about who is on many occasions in previous communiques, and so I've summarized some of those communiques for you to give you a sense of the GAC concerns. And then moving to number four, overview of current who is policy, what I've tried to do here is kind of categorize what I see as the key policy activities that involve who is that are going on right now. So we do have this set of studies, which I could probably spend a whole hour just talking about, so I don't want to go into a lot of detail about that right now. But it's a very important current activity that's going on. I want to draw your attention also to amendments to the RAA that are being considered by the GNSO right now. There is a working group, a joint working group of the At-Large Advisory Committee and the GNSO, which worked for the last year or so to identify high priority amendments to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement in general. But the fact is that there are quite a few proposed changes that involve who is. So while the title of the group is RAA Amendments, please note that there's quite a few suggested who is changes in that proposal that I think you'll find of interest. And then if we can go to the next. There also is a joint SSAC-GNSO working group on who is internationalized registration data. They are presenting here in Cartagena. So, and I believe it's Thursday morning at 9 local time. Very interesting issue, interim report being proposed, and I just want to note that Steve Shang is one of the primary staff people supporting that working group. So you have an excellent resource there in terms of technical aspects of who is. Steve also wrote recently a Who Is Service Requirements Inventory report that was requested by the council, GNSO Council, last year, which is a compendium of all of the existing Who Is service requirements for Who Is, plus additional possible requirements that have been discussed in policy forums at ICANN over the years. So it's linked here. And again, we're happy to spend some time talking this report through with you. I think the thing I really want to emphasize about this report is that there are a lot of quote requirements that are just the technical underpinnings for how we would be able to support various policy initiatives, not any recommendations on any specific policy changes to who is. This inventory was done, again, at the request of the GNSO Council. And here's some of the information, some examples of what's in that report, the kinds of things that have been discussed in previous forums as improvements to who is that at least some communities or some parts of the community think should be changed. The council has not yet discussed this report, even though it's been several months now since we did it, but they will do so at some point, and they'll be considering next steps. We have a section here on IANA because, as you may know, the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority provides a WHOIS server, which provides the ability to look up information for a certain subset of domains. And also in 2010, IANA announced the launch of an experimental who is test server and has been encouraging the community to try it and provide feedback, so you may want to take a look at that. I mentioned one session in Cartagena on who is, and that is this interim report on the internationalized registration data working group, which is Thursday at 9:30 a.m. local time. But there also is another session just following that on what we're calling the technical evolution of who is, where a group of technical folks within ICANN, led by Steve and by Francisco Arias, have been taking a look at kind of technical options for who is, whether to enhance the current protocol, whether to take another look at the IRIS protocol, which has been something that has not gained traction in the community because of some significant challenges in implementation there, and now to take a look at kind of a potentially new option for who is, a web-based who is service based on an HTTP-based representational state transfer protocol called RESTful Whois that's been implemented by a couple of RIRs, by Aaron and by Ripe, in different formats. Steve is the expert on that, so I'm going to stop there. Yes, there is remote access to, thank you, to both sessions. They also will be recorded and transcribed, and I really encourage you to participate in those. And then we do have some links to other reports and references, Annex A. It was my intent with Annex A, really, to make this kind of a working document that perhaps all of the work review team members might contribute to. This is outside reports, non-ICANN produced reports and information. A study by Ben Edelman at Harvard, a GAO study that was done. There's one more. U.S. Federal Trade Commission study, and again, if you have other studies or information or reports or papers that you think would help you all and inform your colleagues, I believe that's something that should be dynamic and that you should be encouraged to add. Annex B is my current status of the GNSO Council requested studies. This will change. This will require frequent update because this is a work in progress. And I have been providing updates to the council. We'll try to keep this up to date too. And then I think the last annex is based on a question that came up about the RAA and the fact that there's two RAAs and the sort of status of the current RAA amendments. And I think that concludes the backgrounder at this time. But I would just simply say that we're happy to try to keep this up to date and add to it, and we encourage you to do it. And if you have any more questions on the details of what I've covered, I'm happy to provide information at a time that's useful.
That was amazing. That was like a tour de force that gets us in right under the gun, right at time. So thank you, Liz. You know that there's going to be about a million questions over the next 9 months that we're going to have on these documents. But let me ask right now whether there are any questions from here locally or on the telephone bridge for Liz. There's a question from Michael Young.
So Francisco and Craig have been going around doing a bit of a roadshow on the who is technical considerations. I think that this kind of briefing beforehand would have helped a lot, because this whole presentation that we've seen, at least and I assume they've given the same presentation to everyone, but at least to the registry stakeholders group, left a lot of where the requirements questions, because they came in with an answer before the question, I think, in some cases. And having a technical background myself, the first thing we always start with is what problem are we trying to solve before we start building things. So I think this presentation was really useful. I think it would be good to roadshow this presentation to put the other presentations in context.
Michael, could you introduce yourself?
Sorry, my name is Michael Young. I'm with Afilias and a member of the Registry Stakeholders Council.
This is Kathy. I'm just going to add my frustration and concern as I look at all of this, which is, as a review team, I would like to stop all work in progress, review it, and then continue. I'm not sure how to deal with systems in motion.
And so I throw that out as my question is, how do we deal with a system that is changing even as we're trying to review and evaluate it? Wilfried.
Yeah, first of all, I would like to very publicly say thank you very much for this compendium. That's a tremendous piece of work, and I don't think that anyone within the review team would have been in a position to pull that together. Not even 50% of that or even less. So thanks for providing us with that. And the second small comment is I think it is really, really interesting. My original background is the IP resource registry for the RIPE region. And just a couple of weeks ago, we had a presentation and a suggestion by an individual from Poland. And most of you probably know that Poland and the Polish language is one of those funny things which has funny characters, like the German language has, and some of the Scandinavian languages have, and the Latin Americans have. And his proposal was actually to identify the WHOIS registry for the IP resources. And that's actually also in the vicinity of sort of law enforcement requirements, because he had pulled up very, very interesting examples that if you remove these funny additional hints from the characters and trim it down to 7-bit ASCII, you end up with a completely different meaning, and you also potentially end up with collisions. And if you feed that data later on, for example, to law enforcement, it could be really interesting to find out what happens. So I just wanted to put that back to the domain name arena, that already in the resource registry arena, at least in Europe, we started to think about those issues. Thank you.
Ms. Bill Smith, I absolutely agree. These are things that need to be done. My comment is that I believe, however, that at that level, this is an issue for the IETF. It's a protocol issue. If it's 7-bit ASCII, that's IETF. It may be a requirement that we have, but the work would have to be done at the IETF to change the RFC.
I have to say it's been 20 years since my life as a techie, and my head is now spinning. So, Wilfried, I hope you'll take us through that more slowly and explain the terms, because now I still jump to IP as intellectual property and have to go back to Internet Protocol. So there's a lot here to grapple with, and I'm really glad that you're here to give us, as soon as I heard your name and heard your background, I'm like, IP addresses are going to be critical as a basis of comparison, as a basis for just a lot of information. So for those of us who aren't in the technical world, thank you for taking us through that now and in the future. Lynn, Susan, Sharon, last word goes to you.
This is Lynn. I don't have any further comments or questions. And I would also like to thank Liz. Having all this background information is just such a big help. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sharon here. That was really useful. Are we going to talk about the London visit further, or is this my last opportunity to speak?
Has Emily joined us? I can share that the agenda is, Emily's working on a draft agenda. But Sharon, please go ahead, because I know you're spending a lot of time and energy organizing for London. So if you would like to take that last, a quick presentation of London, what's happening, please, please do.
Okay. I can't wait to meet you all. I think that once we've all had a face-to-face meeting, things will move on in leaps and bounds. I'm really grateful to be the first host of our first face-to-face meeting. I want to make the event as special as possible for all of you, and if anyone wants to do anything while they're in London, please take time to email me, and if I can facilitate it, I will. I've sort of written off the whole week, so if anyone's coming before the event, I can take them out, or if they don't want to go with me, arrange for them to go somewhere or afterwards. And if you're flying into London, if we can, we'll try and pick you up from the airport. So I want to make it as nice as possible for you all. And that's about it, really. I know Emily's working on the agenda. She's asked me to try and arrange someone to speak from law enforcement. Who knows more than me, which wouldn't take a great deal. Hopefully we'll have a great time, and I can't wait for it. And hope you have a great Christmas if we don't speak before that.
Emily, thank you so much for all you're doing. Thank you for so much time and effort. And I'm not Emily. I'm sorry, Sharon. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Truly, truly appreciate it. And looking forward to being in London and looking forward to what may be 100% attendance from our Who Is Review team and our first face-to-face meeting. So thank you for making that possible. Everyone's crossing their fingers that we really want everybody to be there. Happy holidays to everyone. Any last thoughts from anyone? Olaf, any last thoughts? Oh, Olaf has a last thought.
Oh, this was almost a bit dangerous because Kathy almost stumbled and fell. So, but apart from that, and apart from, well, last comments from I Can Staff Support. Well, we had a few issues here with the technical rigging of the whole thing with the Adobe Connect, but I hope the message went through and that you could follow it properly from remotely as well. And from our side as well, happy to be of assistance and a very Merry Christmas and all seasons greetings, what is appropriate to you. So thanks a lot.
Happy holidays. Again, Sharon's apologies for calling you Emily. And there's a sense here that we've moved forward. And so I hope we're trying to convey and share that with you. And face-to-face will be fantastic. Signing off from this side, take care. Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.